It's very difficult to pin down rock and roll's exact origin, place, and time, but the tragic death of Ritchie Valens, the Big Bopper, and Buddy Holly marks February 1959, the end of its first chapter. Don McLean traces the time from that fateful day the music died to his writing and performing of American Pie in 1971, with nods to all the moments and figures in the next part of the rock and roll story. The song is wonderful, and just like everything else, a primary source of its era, but in a way it contradicts itself. By chronicling rock and roll's influence on the 1960s, he proves that the music didn't die at all, it just scattered into several directions. Fast forward, and I mean fast, to the mid-1970s, New York, and the Ramones were starting on their journey that would, over the next 20 years, parallel the Crickets in some ways.
You know, it's that kind of iconic sound. It was produced from, you know, the state of affairs in 70s New York would only produce that angry kind of driving music.
Mm-hmm.
Yet nobody wanted to hear it, apparently. It was like, yeah, you know, the record, you know, all the radio stations were like, yeah, we're going to play this crap. We're going to put on Donna Summer. You know, like, we're going to... And it's like, it was almost like this complete decision to, like, you know, these are dark times, we just want music to get escapism, we don't want the music that matches up with the dark times. With the 50s, I mean, Buddy Holly is making music that matches the sentiments of the time. It's upbeat, it's happy, but is it because of that, like, ultra conservative kind of, you know, tone to the country of, you know, the feeling, you know, coming from the top down of, like, you know, we are a world power now, we're a superpower, we really need to keep, you know, our collective culture and morals and values, because all eyes are on the country, you know, and this rock and roll stuff, you know, it's the devil's music, it's the bad stuff. You know, is it, I don't know if that's maybe why he wasn't as a, you know, that music didn't get, it was only popular, like, one audience, really. It was only just the teenagers that really liked it. It wasn't a universal sound. I don't know if there's anything to do with that. I just, you know, kind of a thought. I love connecting the two groups, though, because they do go so well together. When it comes to you were mentioning with Buddy Holly and all of his records that he made and all of the touring that he did, it was obviously cut short. It was in the middle of something, you know. Do you ever speculate, have you ever speculated where he would have gone with his sound had he not gotten onto that plane? Like, if he had continued on, would it have evolved in a certain trajectory?
Well, you know, my take on this is, you know, after the tragic plane crash, Waylon Jennings was asked by, I can't even remember who it was, but somebody had asked him, I think it was during the interview, they had asked him if Buddy Holly had lived, where would music have taken him? And Waylon Jennings stopped him, the guy right there in his tracks. He says, had Buddy Holly lived, it's where would Buddy Holly have taken music? And it's really interesting because, you know, Buddy Holly had wanted to, you know, he still wanted to tour and stuff, but he was really more into wanting to get in to produce and to record. Matter of fact, he was making plans to build a recording studio. And, you know, he wanted Waylon Jennings to be one of the first acts that he produced. And he was really wanting to go that route because he was really a great idea person. So, you know, kind of, I don't know if I'd mentioned this to you or not. In one of the times that we had talked on Facebook, you know, it's like I was thinking, like, the album by the Ramones, Into the Century, that was produced by Phil Spector.
I was actually just going to ask you about Phil Spector, if Buddy would have been a rival of his.
Yeah. Well, yes, no disrespect to Phil, because Phil was a genius. The Wall of Sound, he was a genius. But had Buddy Holly lived, I personally think that Buddy might have taken the place of Phil Spector in regards to the Ramones, and he would have got him on the air. He would have got him. I just don't think that they would have gone through what they went through as far as not being on the radio and forced to tour. But I mean, I shouldn't say forced to tour, but you know, that they toured quite a bit because they weren't getting the radio airplay, you know, and they had to keep their name out there. But I don't know. Once again, that's all speculation. So
I like to only deal with the what is or what was, not what if. But it's just, you hear some of those later recordings of Buddy Holly and what do you like, True Love Ways, like that one using like an orchestra was at least 10 years before his time. Like Brian Wilson wasn't doing stuff like that until the end of the 60s. Like, and at the same time, it's almost like his untimely death just put a spike into the music that he had already made into 1959. It's like, okay, that's a milestone. Like that's our ending point. I kind of hear it, and I wrote about this on my Substack last week about Waylon Jennings and the direction that like outlaw country went, late 60s, early 70s, where they're borrowing heavily from rock and roll, Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash to a certain extent, basically the Highwaymen of the 80s. They're like borrowing from the rock and roll attitude and the rock and roll sound, but they're still technically country music. I kind of like to envision like a shaggy haired, Buddy Holly with Roy Orbison sunglasses instead of, the, 10 years later up there on stage, like, hey, we got him out of the producer's, studio. Let's get him on stage again. Hey, everybody, here's Buddy Holly. And it's almost like that medley of Buddy Holly hits that Waylon Jennings does, which, they stay true to the pacing of the songs and everything, but man, are those like drums heavier and like the bass is like really driving hard. And I'm like, would it have been a Roy Orbison type thing? Would Buddy have gone that direction? And it's all speculation. We don't know, but all the signs seem to be pointing to what Waylon said. I love that quote of like, no, he wouldn't have followed. He would have been leading. Like he would be on there, and it would imagine. I'm gonna have like dreams now of like a alternate universe where Buddy Holly is producing the Ramones in their fourth or fifth album or something like that, and it's like a match made in heaven.
Well, there was, I remember, I don't know why I'm saying this, but I remember somebody joking. They were saying, you know, that if Buddy Holly would have been around in the 60s, you know, would he have still been doing his own thing, or would it have been Buddy Holly and the Hot Rods, you know, because of the big Jan and Dean and the Beach Boys thing. But I still think he would have been doing his own thing. Like I said, he wanted to really get into the producing thing. And actually, you know, there were two people that Buddy Holly wanted to record with and never got to record with. And one of them was Mahalia Jackson, and the other one was Ray Charles. So it kind of shows you that Buddy Holly had, you know, he had a lot of different things going in his head. You know, I want to do rock and roll, but I want to produce records. I want to produce records, but I want to work with, you know, a gospel singer, Mahalia Jackson, or I want to work with the great, you know, Ray Charles. So just a lot of
You can't
irons in the fire.
help but admire somebody that has a brain like that, like Buddy Holly's mindset of, like you said, just being the ideas person. And it's so, it's not exclusive to one time period or another. It's not a 50s thing, it's not a 60s thing. It's a very American thing, that's for sure, of like feeling that ultimate freedom of like, all right, my brain's going this direction. I want to get something. Okay, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to dog it until I can get it done. It's like such a shame that it was wasted. And nothing against, Richie Valens had all, signs were pointing to him being, I mean, he was a phenom. I mean, he was 17 years old and he had already had hit records. Who knows if that would have actually translated into anything later in his career, because there's plenty of artists who, kind of petered out young age. But, it seems like that whole that day the music died is a lot more impactful than I think a lot of people realize. It's just like, but especially Buddy Holly, because that was where, you know, those, the churning out of just like constant, like, okay, I'm going to try this now. And I think I can do that. And, you know, him looking to move to New York, obviously he felt he couldn't find that in either Lubbock or in Nashville. Did he have much of a Nashville connection?
Well, actually he had recorded for Decca Records and, you know, they wanted him to be more of a country and Western musician, and he couldn't, he didn't really want to do that. So, I mean, they put out some recordings, but, you know, it just wasn't for him, and he never got signed with Decca, which, you know, it's just one of those unfortunate mistakes. I sit there and I think of, you know, another huge mistake that Decca made by not signing somebody, and that would have been the Beatles.
Yeah, they could have saved themselves a lot of trouble. And
but they didn't want to sign, you know, they didn't want to sign somebody who didn't want to fit into their mold. And yeah. You know, and he knew what he wanted to do, and he knew he wouldn't be happy if he was being told to do something he didn't want to do. So
yeah, and that's another mark of that kind of mind, that kind of genius of mm-hmm. forward thinking, knowing that he, you know, would be signing his life away basically and all of his creative talents to a record company that, and you know, it seems like Ray Charles had a similar pattern. No wonder they would have, you know, Buddy Holly was attracted to somebody like Ray Charles, because he similarly had those kinds of, I don't want to say visions, but he had, you know, he had those kind of like, man, I can't get around it, foresight. He had a great mind for that kind of like, you know, forward thinking kind of thing. And, you know, a lot of it, of course, I'm basing on the movie Ray, which, you know, does a decent job, I think, of showing where he came from and how he, you know, got to where he went. And a lot of it came from a willingness to try new things and not just stick with what worked, you know, what worked a year ago might not work, you know, 6 months from now. So I really need to change it up, stay fresh, stay moving. So, you know, the long form of this is that, yes, Buddy Holly definitely would have had a lot of different sounds to his name by the time his career came to an end, if it was a natural, you know, ending to his life. I just kind of popped into my head, you know, we were saying the shortcomings of the 78 movie, and I know that that's produced a, you know, not far from me, they put on the Buddy Holly story every now and then in the summertime at one of those summer theaters. And they, you know, they have a tour where, you know, they do that same story. Do you think he deserves another movie, another biopic in the near future?
Well, like I said, I can't say too much about it, but supposedly there is another one in the works.
Oh, good.
And I was...
Wait, I say that hesitantly, actually.
Sorry, I thought I read something online that it's called Clear Lake, and I don't remember if that's going to be the title or not, but... like I said, that was a couple of years ago, so I don't know if they're all on it or not. But there was also a movie that never came to fruition, but you can see the trailer on YouTube. There was a science fiction book that was written called Buddy Holly is Alive and Well on Ganymede.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember hearing that title. Yeah. And, Jupiter's Moon.
Right, and the main character is a Buddy Holly fan, and it's kind of like one of those post-apocalyptic rock and roll type movies. It never would. Okay. The trailer is kind of interesting. I'm surprised they didn't actually try to put it out, because I think it would have been a good movie, but it never went.
Yeah, was that like fairly recent, or was it years ago?
Well, the YouTube video has been out there for probably 5, 6, 7 years.
Okay.
So it's been quite a while.
It's like, I feel like the ebbs and flows of those kinds of the fandoms that are created, you know, for artists like Buddy Holly or, you know, we keep bouncing back and forth to him and the Ramones, because there are so many similarities that, you know, it's like when it starts to rise again, people are like, we really need to have that in the movies. But at the same token, it's like, well, you know, right now, movies are not, the movie theater is not where you want to put that story. You want to make a miniseries, you know. And I heard about a year ago, Pete Davidson was supposedly playing Joey Ramone in a a series version of his brother Mickey Lee's book, I Slept with Joey Ramone. But they've been talking Ramone's biopics for years now. And it gets complicated with the rights to the music, because I guess Linda Ramone owns most of their catalog and doesn't want to release it to just anybody. So that's why, like, that CBG, that's why I said hesitantly if they were to do a Buddy Holly movie, because I remember what they did with CBGB, the movie. And I was just like, oh, like, especially when the Ramones showed up on that. I'm like, I don't think they looked like they did in 1992 when they first took the stage in 1975 or whatever. I'm like, and then they played some song that it was like a Joey Ramone solo song from, you know, late 90s. I'm like, please.
I also remember reading, boy, it had to have been over 10 years ago, that Martin Scorsese was going to do a Ramones movie, but I don't think anything became of that. But
yeah.
That would be interesting if Martin Scorsese was able to do something like that. You could be pretty well assured it would be pretty darn good.
It would be great. And because if anybody's going to be able to get the tone of, you know, because I mean, he did Taxi Driver in that era, you know, like that's like a product of the exact same thing the Ramones were a product of. And so if anybody could get it right, you know, it'd be him. It's the marketability thing. You know, it's the same thing with a lot of these artists. Like I feel like I haven't seen, you know, about 10, 15 years ago, they were churning out biopics left and right. Yeah. You know, it was like, that was like the thing. It was like they had Walk the Line, and before that was Ray. And then they had like three or four, who's that woman singer, her name escapes me, from the 60s, who also died young.
Janis Joplin?
Yes. They had like three Janis Joplin movies in the works and never got made. And it was like, that was like the height of, let's make a movie about these 50s and 60s artists time, you know? And then they just kind of like, I haven't heard or seen anything like that in a while. So it's just like, you know, kind of like the point of my podcast is those kinds of things, like movies even, they tell you about the time period too. They tell you about the culture, because, you know, unlike there's enough work that goes into making a record, but there's a lot of work that goes into making a movie.
Right.
And a studio, even like an independent one, is like, yeah, we're not going to put millions of dollars towards something that nobody wants to see. So unless there's a huge demand for it.
Right. So kind of like, you know, going off what you were saying, you know, I think sometimes, those in charge at making the movie say, well, if we fudge on the facts, maybe we'll be able to sell a few more tickets. So, you know, that's why you got some movies that were put out like in the late 70s up to, well, you know, some even now that have got a lot, you know, quite a few inaccuracies and just enough of the facts to sell extra tickets at the movie.
Right.
And I was also going to mention, too, that, you know, I keep telling my wife, I'm usually pretty critical about stuff like this, but I've been noticing lately that it seems like movies, especially when they're dealing with biopics, are trying a little harder to be a little more accurate. And I'm going to talk about movies like, well, I'm not going to talk about it, but I'll mention them briefly, like Nowhere Man, The Life and Times of John Lennon. And I go to like movies like Bohemian Rhapsody. And what else? Rocket Man.
Yes.
I think there was more accuracies in like those three movies than in a lot of the movies that came out prior to the movie.
Now that you remind me of those, I guess I have to retract my previous statement of no biopics in a while, because those all came out around the same time and they were fairly recent.
I don't know. I kind of think in a while too, to me, sometimes means 20 or 30 years ago. So,
yeah, but it's, I think one of the things that a lot of people have to keep in mind before they stake out on those kinds of those projects is like, now that we have not only the internet, but like rabid fan bases,
right.
Like, as we know from being in those Ramones groups on Facebook, there's a lot of gatekeepers in those communities. There's people who are like, unless you know every single thing about, you know, their real names and, you know, the, you know, what size shoe they wore and, you know, like their favorite foods and stuff like that, you're not a real fan. And I would pity any kind of director who would take on the task of trying to present the group as close to reality as they could, because they would just get taken apart. Like, the fans would destroy it. Anybody connected to the band, you know, would be like, that's, you know, and they would have a public place to say it. They would go onto YouTube. They would go onto podcasts. Like, a couple years ago, there was some play in Chicago called like Three Chords and a Gun or something. And it was about the Phil Spector sessions with End of the Century. And that night that they hung out at his house, things went weird. And I'll join the bandwagon when I saw like clips of it and, you know, the actors that they got to, I'm like, I don't think any of these guys had ever seen a picture of the Ramones or like they didn't seem like they knew what they were doing. And that rightly got destroyed. But I don't think any director is going to take that on and be like, yeah, I'm going to make a movie now to just to have my career, you know, demolished by these guys.
Well, you know, like I said, you know, with all due respect, you know, when I've seen the videos too, and like I said, the only thing I can say is that I think they would have been more successful if they would have probably paid a little more attention to, you know, them starting out at CBGBs and things like that, as opposed to. The one thing I didn't like about it is it pretty much made them seem like they were at each other's throats 90% of the time, which, you know, when you go to see a play or you go to see a movie, you go to get away from your problems, not have the problems come with you. So I don't think I would have approached it the way they did, but that's not me.
I guess that's why, and to bring things back to Buddy Holly and maybe to wrap things up as well, I think that's why somebody with the way that you describe him, the way he was, maybe it is a good time to bring him back into pop culture. Mm-hmm. And I think that we could all, you know, because if nothing else, I mean, I wouldn't be doing this, what I'm doing right now, had it not been for COVID-19. You know, like, I wouldn't have thought for a minute to like take a pause from my career and my life and say, you know, because I was considering getting into radio when I was in college, but I went the teaching direction instead. And so it gave me an opportunity to go back to what I love to do and what I, you know, wanted to do in the first place. And I think that there's a lot of people nowadays in the 2020s that are experiencing similar kinds of dilemmas and could really use a dose of an idea man like Buddy Holly, somebody who was willing to take risks and, you know, was constantly brain churning, thinking of the next thing. So, you know, between the two, because the only other thing I could think of with the Ramones picture, and I remember commenting this one time on one of those pages, and somebody was like, yeah, that actually could work, is a focus, and maybe they'll do this if the Pete Davidson thing takes off, but a focus on Joey's struggle with his obsessive compulsive disorder and some of his other mental illnesses, because I think if it's not to get away from something, you watch movies to give you encouragement and to show somebody with those kinds of afflictions to be beloved by, you know, most of the world except for America, you know, like Joey Ramone was, would be a great story to tell. And then, you know, put it together maybe with a back to back with a Buddy Holly story too.
Well, like I said, one thing I think I can say, and it might be a good way to wrap this up, is that, you know, when Buddy started out with Buddy and Jack, you know, his friend Jack Neal, Buddy made the comment to his friend Jack. He said, You know, I don't care if I make a lot of money doing what I'm doing. You know, I just want my music to be remembered. And then that kind of makes me think of the comment that Joey Ramone made when he said, you know, I was happy before the money. I kind of like the idea of that, of being happy. So, you know, so it just kind of shows you know, that great minds do think alike, and that, you know, that like people like Joey Ramone and Buddy Holly were, in my opinion, kindred spirits, but.
They're probably rocking right now together or producing, because I know Joey also was got interested in producing as well. He wasn't so much into making new music, but he liked being behind the control booth and all that. So yeah, I those are great words to end with, and I'll probably edit out my dumb comment from just a moment ago because I love what you said. So Gary, I'm so glad we got to make this work, and
We
I'm
can do
always
it
so
again.
dazzled by the way that the internet helps make connections like this. So I'm so glad. Thank you again for joining the Everything is a Primary Source podcast, where everything, including Buddy Holly, is a document of history. And before we go, is there anywhere that people can find you online, your books? Where can people
Yeah,
locate your work?
if you want to look for the books, so you can find them on Amazon. Just you can search by the title of the book, which is Words of Love 1959, or The Cricket 6 Decades of Rock and Roll Memories, or just type in my name, Gary, and then the last name Clevenger, Clevenger.
And thank you, Gary, for joining the show. And I
Thank
hope
you. Appreciate it.
we can do it again soon. And I'm gonna.